Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, because, hey, Kelly's not here again this week. He should be back next week in a little bit of an unexpected emergency, but everything's cool. He should be back with us next week, and we'll talk with Kelly. But I'm here right now, Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I did not write tonight. I wrote the live report for Kelly. I hope to get back to the NXT hits and misses next week. If I can find some time this week to write it, I will. But tonight, we're not here to talk about me or Kelly or anything like that. We're here to talk NXT 2.0 and our Fatal 4-Way main event that we saw here tonight for the NXT tag team titles between MSK, Grizzled Young Vets, Brooks Jensen, and Hayes and Williams here. So in order to do that, I should probably get somebody else on the line to talk with me, and that person there would be Mr. Tom Stoupe.
Hey, yes, at Tom Stoupe on Twitter. Occasionally doing things for the Torch, every once in a while. The most recent time I fired something up on the site, Wade noticed that I was writing a new article, and he was like, oh, hey, man, I actually have that covered already. Oh, okay, yeah, no problem. But, you know, it was a good episode of Raw anyway. Actually, no, it wasn't, but... I've been doing that more and more lately. I'm like, okay, I see myself going down a rabbit hole. I better say something to just, you know, nip it in the bud so I can move on to the next thing. And then the thing I end up saying ends up being untrue. What does that say about me? Yeah, it was not the best episode of Raw ever. But anyway, yeah, I also keep calling them Brooks and Jensen. Those damn B's and J's. Briggs and Jensen. I wrote it that way in my notes, too.
Yeah, so did I. Brooks and Jensen. It's Briggs and Jensen in my notes. Yeah, maybe I wrote that in the live report too. I'll have to look. But anyway, so this was an interesting match. It was definitely a hard match to cover for the live report. That's for sure. A lot of moving parts here. But we did wind up seeing MSK retain. I thought this was a pretty entertaining match. I'm not a huge fan of multi-man tag matches. They usually lose me about halfway through because they're so chaotic and there's so many things going on that, like, I'm just kind of like, eh. And I usually wait, especially in an elimination style type match like this, I usually really kind of wait until it's down to like two teams or just two guys. If it's, you know, a singles elimination, it's down to just two competitors before I really kind of start paying attention. However, I did enjoy this. I was a little upset the Grizzly Young Vets got kicked out so early because, you know, I really want to see a Grizzly Young Vets tag team title reign here. But it is what it is. I was also a little surprised that Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams got eliminated so early because there has been a big focus put on them recently, especially them being the new addition with the new NXT 2.0. I didn't really expect them to win. Same thing with Briggs and Jensen. I didn't necessarily expect them to win. I figured it was going to either be MSK or Grizzled Young Vets. But I expected them to play a little bit more of a role in the match than they did. But all said and done, you know, like I'm okay with it. I don't really see where MSK goes from here. Well, that's not true. Imperium, because obviously Imperium beat them down at the end of the show. But Imperium versus MSK, I don't know. Been there, done that. Doesn't really seem super appealing to me. Unless Imperium really shows a much more of an edge to them than they did than they have in the past. It kind of seemed like more of a jobber team than that that badass Imperium that we saw years ago. You know, when they still had Alexander Wolfe and Walter, and they were just dominating both NXT and NXT UK. I guess Walter's still with them, but you know what I mean. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm for that, but is what it is. Tom, what'd you think about the Fatal 4-Way main event and where they might be going from here?
I think I would have already forgotten that Imperium showed up at the end if you hadn't mentioned it. I can't say that them reinserting themselves fires me up all that much.
I kind of forgot myself until I was reading my notes. I was like, oh, yeah, that happened.
The only significant thing about it for me, which now that I look at my notes, I did remind myself of it as well, is the Thank You Imperium chant, which is legitimately the first time that I have personally clocked the crowd being anti-MSK. Everybody talks about it all the time, how the crowd keeps gatekeeping MSK for some reason, and I just haven't noticed it. And yes, you know, it's especially noticeable at the Performance Center shows, but you know, WWE is overall sweetening their audio more than ever now. But, you know, so there's that, but I've just never noticed it to an extent where I actually was like, oh, wow, the crowd doesn't like these guys until tonight. And I agree with you I agree across the board. The match seemed like it was probably fine. I blinked and Trick and Mello were out, and I was not super pleased about that because I was they were the part of the match I was most looking forward to seeing. But the reason I blinked to have missed them getting eliminated was because, yes, indeed, not only are matches like this always just sort of like eye rolls until you get to the part that actually matters. But this is that typical NXT main event. And believe me, dear listener, I am as bored of me saying it as you are of hearing it. But this is what NXT does. They tell the main event story ahead of time, and then the match itself is just work rate, story light, maybe some post-match stuff. But it's just guys working. It's not guys telling a story, which is what grabs me. So the best thing I can say about it is it was a nice little spot for, let's get this right, Briggs. Yep, there we go. And Jensen, I mean, yeah, everybody looked good, but I, you know, Briggs and Jensen losing in their first match didn't, you know, wave the flag that I needed to pay attention to them all that much. But now here they are. Last team eliminated and doing the little belt handoff spot with MSK. So good for them.
Yeah. And I don't know, do you feel like the two of them are miscast? Like I like the act, but for me, I don't know. I feel like they come across as heels, not necessarily in what they're doing. It's just like the act itself. I don't know. In my head, I feel like they should be heels, and it's almost tough for me to think of them as baby faces. I don't know if that's just me or if you get the same thing.
Not to the extent that I would have mentioned it, although I'd be lying if I said it didn't ever occur to me. I think mostly it just seems like they are playing roles. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of heavy gimmicking going on right now, but for the most part, I would argue that the heavy gimmicking we're seeing on 2.0 is fit to the wrestler. There aren't too many mismatches, but it does seem like if any mismatches, I'd definitely have to think about that one. But it does seem like these guys are playing the part of the good old boy. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking too much about, you know, what I've seen prior from the Evolve one. The B and the J names, man. It gets that's getting me.
Yeah, really.
But then Ben Buchanan, I mean, that's total sight unseen, but I mean, maybe that's just bad acting. I don't know. Maybe this is who he is through and through.
Yeah, that could be. That could certainly be. All right. So I guess with that, let's get over to the phone lines, because we actually have quite a few of you guys who are looking to talk with us here tonight. So to kick things off, we're going to go to area code 410. 410, go ahead, state your name and where are you calling from? Do we have you? I don't think we do at the moment. I'm going to mute you.
Hello?
And we'll come back. Oh, hold on.
Hello?
I heard you when I muted you. Hold on. Here we
yes,
go.
Sir.
Are we there?
How you doing?
There we go.
How you doing? This is Reverend Keith. How you doing?
Not too bad, Keith. I thought it was you. How are we doing tonight, my friend?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I'm going to be brief and to the point. And, Tom, it's always good to hear your voice, man.
Likewise, Reverend Keith. Good old blog talk, eh?
Yes, sir. But I just wanted to say, I think that it's time for Frankie Monet to be called up to the main roster and be placed with her husband, John Morrison, because I think right now her character is really being defined down. She's being used as a gatekeeper slash jobber, and she's too experienced for that. You know, I mentioned this to Greg Parks a couple nights ago, and I saw it as coming, and I was just surprised tonight that, you know, that Cora Jade got her first win over Frankie, because I like Frankie. I always did when she was in Impact and over the Reynas champion. So we'll see where that goes. And also, you know, this NXT 2.0 is interesting right now because, you know, they're building up a lot of the younger stars. But at the same token, I think they need to take it a little bit slower because Bron Breakker, he's being just transitioned to, like, champion within, like, weeks. And I think that they should, you know, just take their time, build to a great story arc, then deliver upon the storylines. So to make a long story short, guys, and I'm going to let you mull over this, and I'm going to go, I think they've incorporated Joe Gacy into the storyline with Ciampa so that that'll give him an out. I think it'll eventually be a triple threat at Halloween Havoc, and I could see Ciampa retaining and then Breakker getting the title down the road. So let me know your thoughts on that. Thanks for taking my call. Have a blessed night.
All right, Keith, always good to hear from you, man. Always good to hear from you. So we'll start with we're going to start with Frankie Monet, and we'll get into the Joe Gacy stuff momentarily here. So we had Frankie Monet kind of interfering in a match, kind of, sort of. Originally, the match was scheduled for Cora Jade versus Virginia Perry, who I'm not really sure who she is. She was, I guess, just a jobber going up against Cora Jade, and Cora Jade's, I guess, essentially a re-debut of Cora Jade. I think we've seen her on NXT before, but this is kind of her re-debut here tonight. During Cora Jade's entrance, Frankie Monet and Robert Stone actually tagged Virginia Perry, and then just kind of Frankie Monet took her place in the match. They told the ring announcer as well as the referee, like, hey, no, this is Cora Jade's opponent now. And, you know, that just happened because I guess if you just want a match, you can just go down to the ring, take out your opponent, and you can put yourself in the match. Apparently, that's cool down in NXT. William Regal's totally fine with it. So that's what happened. We got Frankie Monet versus Cora Jade. Cora Jade with an upset win here in let me pull up the time in a second here. But Cora Jade with an upset win, a roll-up, 2 minutes and 10 seconds, a roll-up on Frankie Monet. And Frankie Monet was pretty much getting the upper hand throughout the entirety of the matchup. So it was kind of a shock win, I guess, for Cora Jade. I hate to say I expected Cora Jade to win this, but I kind of did with all of the focus that they've been putting on Cora Jade and her boyfriend, Trey Baxter, in the past few weeks. And also too, that they were, you know, pushing this as Cora Jade's re-debut. Her debut on NXT 2.0 debut. It's really not something that we see often to have somebody kind of lose in a debut match. So I was expecting the win, but I am completely on board with you, Keith, when it comes to Frankie Monet. I feel like she has really been, she's really been defined down from where I feel like she should be. She came into a lot of pomp and circumstance. I know the three of us here on the show, we had her slotted in pretty high up on the card. If memory serves, I know at least I did, had her slotted up pretty high up on the card, and she's just kind of toiling around with, like, Robert Stonebrand, Mandy Rose, and now, you know, now doing this thing here with Cora Jade. I feel like there could be so much more that she could be doing. And if her going up to the main roster is what it takes, then by all means, I'm down. I'm completely down with it. I'd really like to see, you know, her and John Morrison kind of get back, you know, get together and see what they could do. I think that would involve moving Morrison and Miz away from one another. I don't know where, I don't remember where either one of them landed in the draft. They landed together or separate. I can't think of that off the top of my head, but regardless, I think, you know, obviously the two of them probably need to split up before Frankie Monet and John Morrison could really kind of flourish together as an act, I think. But yeah, I'd totally be all for that. I want to see a lot more out of her. Feel like right now in this gatekeeper type role, they're kind of holding her back. Tom, what do you think?
I think my internet browser is too slow to be able to tell me where John Morrison got drafted, but Miz is on Raw. And I think the phrase you were looking for is palm and circumstance. Lest we forget. Boy, my internet browser is real. I was going to read Michael McGivern's email on this subject, but my, wow. I swear this is a new computer. Oh, there we go. Gentlemen.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, you'd have to ask Apple about that one. Rabbit hole. Oh, can you tell I'm feeling hazy tonight? The kids go back to school and you just can't stay healthy. That's
oh,
okay.
Gotta love that.
Yeah, God, I'm sure I'm running a fever or something. Anyway, good thing it's only audio and I don't actually have to say these things out loud. Muscling through, Michael McGivern writes, "Gentlemen, I didn't care for Frankie Monet interjecting herself into a match with Cora Jade. NXT." Used to always have logical matches and angles, and this was the latest case of NXT becoming something it's not. I did like Jade with the upset, though. I'm starting to get strong Razor Ramon 123 Kid vibes from this angle. Looking forward to seeing where this goes. Thanks, Michael McGivern. So I think I did not like this either, that specific element of it. And I think all it needed was just a little moment, and you could see Cora Jade up there in the ring nodding like, okay, let's go. But I think we needed more of a visible moment where Cora was asked, like, well, we had this time scheduled for you to have a match. Do you want to have it against Frankie? And have Cora go like, you know what? Yeah, bring it on. And then it's like, all right, sure. Use this TV time for that. That's fine. And I think that's just a little straighten your tie moment. Speaking of, Virginia Ferry is, of course, Ellie the Dream Girl, making her second appearance under that name. So they're going back to her. So that's something. I actually thought that this was maybe Frankie Monet's best match on NXT yet. Everything else has been some scale of, okay, I know she's better than that, or I know she's better to that, up to a ceiling of like, all right, she's getting her WWE legs under her. That was good, but we know she's better. And this is the first time I was like, all right, there's the Taya we know. She lost, but doesn't make a difference. I agree with all of that. The complaints there, but hey, we were all looking at this segment to be the debut of Trey Baxter's superhero gimmick. And thankfully that didn't happen. He wore an ugly polo shirt.
Stand back. There's a boyfriend coming through. Oh God, I'm glad that didn't happen either. We already have one superhero with Nikki A.S.H. We've had another superhero with the Hurricane. Do we need another? All right, and then what the other thing? Oh, my God, Tom, help me. What else did Keith talk about?
So he was worried about fast-tracking Bron Breakker and the possibly adding Joe Gacy to the title match. Actually, I think I'm going to go ahead and read another email. I didn't even ask permission to do that. I'm just doing it.
You know what, Tom? Kelly's not here. Let's just—it's off the rails. Whatever we want to do tonight, man.
I guess I'm a total mess, as you can tell. I can't get my brain straight.
I said to you before the show, so am I.
How do we still have listeners? JB from Detroit says, "Is it just me?" Maybe JB, we'll see. Or does having Ciampa defend the title next week against Joe Gacy for seemingly no reason take a little bit of the luster off the matchup with Breakker in a few weeks at Halloween Havoc? Very main roster-ish, in my opinion. Also, are you as surprised as I am that under the new 2.0 banner, they are continuing on with Halloween Havoc for the second straight year? Briefly on that, yes, I am to an extent. Halloween Havoc was silly enough that it seems like it'll totally blend right in with this.
Yeah.
I've also been really wondering if takeovers are behind us. I mean, that's just pure speculation on my part, but I've been wondering that, and if they just do TV, you know, like being reminded or being shown that the occasional TV special, named TV special, is still in the NXT playbook, you know, that could easily take the place of takeovers, even though it would be really easy to, you know, it's right there in the PC, and the fans don't pay for it. They just got to book a bus to bus them over from Full Sail, and because they still gather at Full Sail, in case that sounded confusing to anyone, and they just pop it up on Peacock. I don't see why not. Maybe under a different name, but still, been wondering. So that is where my mind is at with that. But yeah, regarding Keith and JB's possible concerns or ponderings here. First of all, my impression is, I believe what Ciampa said was, hey, let's wrestle next week, and if you can beat me next week, then you can get added to the match at Havoc. So I'm pretty sure that's what's happening with Gacy. Yeah, seems to come out of the blue, but we will talk about Gacy being tied up with Parker Boudreau now. So that is probably going to play in one way or another. I don't personally expect Gacy to make it to the Havoc match. Again, we'll get into exactly why when we get to that. But I, you know, Keith is one of those, like Kelly is, Keith is one of those who looks at the chess pieces like 10 moves ahead. And I don't excel at that as much. So I wasn't even thinking about moving the title, or rather not, I don't think Keith said moving the title. I think Keith said protecting Breaker by not putting his shoulders to the mat. And that does actually sound compelling, because then you continue the program. My thought on Breaker is that they've done a significant enough job of signaling, hey, he's the new guy. And he, for his part, has done a good enough job of living up to that signaling so far that I'm okay with strapping the rocket. Every once in a while, you can do that. You should do that. And I think that this one is working so far. Again, the terrible name that we're already used to saying. I think that in itself is evidence to how well Breaker is working in what he's been asked to do so far. So I feel like this is set up for, could they hotshot? Sure. But I think this is set up for Ciampa to like make sure, do his absolute damnedest as Ciampa can to make sure that Breaker has the early match of his life and earns our respect that much more, so we are that much more on the Breaker journey. So when he does eventually reach whatever echelon he reaches, we're that much more invested, because 2.0 has torn down a lot they're starting back from zero in a lot of different ways. So they're having to win people back a lot with the act that they are presenting. So I think that is Ciampa versus Breaker. The way that I'm thinking of it is a potentially key building block in winning people over with this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's kind of taking that old guard and blending it with the new guard. Going back to what you said about, you know, well, obviously, you know, kind of Keith and Kelly both being, you know, those chess masters kind of thinking 10 steps ahead. I got to admit, that is something that crossed my mind with Joe Gacy kind of being a part of that match, simply just being there to take the pin, you know, from Ciampa. So Breaker isn't the one to eat the pin. Because I can't see them putting the title on Ron Breaker at the moment. Part of me like would expect it, because, you know, it's kind of shocking and he's, you know, the new guy. They're trying to strap the rocket to him, like you said. But I also think he's still too new and too green to be that face of the company, be the face of the brand rather. And, you know, and hold that title. But I think he's certainly a great challenger right now for Ciampa. And this is certainly a good way to build him up, build Bron Breakker up as a credible, kind of a credible threat on the roster. So I do like that. Joe Gacy, man, I got to admit, I think this gimmick is growing on me. I was not sure what to make of this when he kind of first debuted. It was a little weird and a little eerie, Gronkowski kind of, and just the fact that his name is Gacy and he's kind of, you know, giving a little bit of an homage to, you know, a serial killer was a little eh for me too. But I don't know, man, like last week, you know, the promos he gave last week after coming back and you know, saying, hey, look, I'm not canceled like everybody says I was. And then just, you know, what he said here tonight and just his whole demeanor during the match that he had, you know, and I guess we'll talk about that. So you can talk about that now, really. But in his match, it just it kind of like almost like he didn't want to fight. But then when he did fight, he was like he was really he was energetic and he was throwing some power behind his moves and things like that. I really liked the way he wrestled and kind of that contrast between the, hey man, let's use our words and let's talk. And then just like, no, I'm done talking. And then, you know, just pummeling somebody. And that was kind of the way I figured that the gimmick was going to go. We started to see some shades of that tonight. I like it. It's kind of growing on me and I wasn't expecting it to. I don't think he's going to necessarily reach like, you know, NXT champion level either, but I almost kind of see him all, in a similar light as Cameron Grimes, kind of that same level right now. At least that's kind of where I'm thinking that's where they're slotting him too, is kind of, you know, upper mid-card, but could also dance with the upper, you know, the main event scene too, you know, when the time calls for it. So I'm cool with it. Bron Breakker, I still wish they'd change the name. I hope they change the name someday. I think they're probably stuck. They're probably sticking to their guns at this point, but man, I just want to see the better name because I can't see people like, I don't know, man, like wearing a Bron Breakker shirt as the face of the company that just doesn't, I don't know. It seems weird. I don't like it.
I will go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to just move us on.
Oh, well, I'll touch on Gacy versus Jiro since we're there. Although sure. I will circle back real quick because I talked about all the Ciampa and Breakker stuff without referencing back to my notes. I'll just pay lip service to the fact that I wrote my notes anticipating that this promo off was going to be interrupted. And I was like, oh, they're getting a decent amount of time to just talk mano a mano. That's pretty good, you know, before Pete Dunne inevitably walks out or whatever. So that didn't happen. So I'm glad that, or at least if my mushy brain remembers correctly, that didn't happen. So I'm glad that they managed to restrain themselves there and focus on the two guys at the center of all of this. And the talk about, I've got the biggest balls in the locker room. You know, we think about the Attitude Era as being so letter pushing. Is that pushing? No, envelope pushing. It's gonna be that night. Envelope pushing. They were still saying fortitude instead of balls. They were still referring to their intestines instead of balls. I don't know. I'm still. It's just such a masculine thing. I'm like, can't we? I liked fortitude. I didn't mind that at all. You know, and it applies to everybody. But whatever. Gacy and Jiro, I agree with you. I am I'm still interested in the Gacy character, and there is probably a wavelength that he's referencing or speaking to. That I'm not exactly on. I totally until Dr. Catani brought it up last week, I didn't know anything about him getting canceled I didn't know about that whole thing. And I didn't know, like, his whole promo tonight was about social media platforms crashing. I would not have known that that was a thing that happened yesterday if Stephen Colbert didn't joke about it in his monologue. So, you know, that's how old I am. Yeah,
God, I was getting help desk tickets yesterday. Facebook's down, and I'm like, "Well, A, why are you using Facebook at work? And B, what do you want me to do about it?"
It's a promotional tool. I am afraid that I'm going to continue to be in the dark on some of his referential nuance. But I will say that he added to his act this week. Where they added a peace sign behind him when he walks out. At least I didn't notice that before. I didn't notice his music before, and it's like psychedelic hippie music. So that might be new tonight, or maybe I just didn't notice it. And it's just like, That's from 60 years ago. This is a bit of a hodgepodge. These aren't the same, like the cancel culture and the hippies, it's not the same thing. People aren't doing the peace sign, as far as I know, like not in that way. And then it clearly mandated mentions of participation trophies, because he mentions it in his promo, and then Vic Joseph mentions it on commentary. That's like a 20-year-old issue at this point. So I don't even know if, like, right-wing people who like to thump on that one even still use the participation trophy line. I haven't heard it in a while. But anyway, this all leads up to, of course, Parker Boudreau showing up, shaved head, in the bleachers and menacingly glaring down at Gacy, who's smiling up at him. And this could go two ways. This could go, or I mean, well, you know, maybe I'm not thinking creatively enough, but I think that it could go a Wyatt family direction, and Gacy will have the killer behind him while he's spouting stuff about safe spaces, and that could be interesting. But I'm wondering, because we're still thinking that this version of Gacy is the scab over the festering wound that is his dark past, and the person that or if not his past, at least like the maniac that he really is. So I'm suspecting that Boudreau is actually someone from his past who has shown up and knows who Gacy really is. And Gacy's just smiling up, kind of like, okay, I've got to keep this smile on, but oh, crap. And so, yeah, I think that we will learn much more about this relationship, or at least get much more suggested about the direction of this relationship next week during Ciampa versus Gacy, where I suspect Boudreau will Boudreau doesn't need to cost Casey Gacy per se, because, you know, it's Ciampa. He can beat Gacy and nobody's going to think that Gacy's being damaged or whatever. But I'm leaning more toward Boudreau not being on Gacy's side here.
You know, it's funny when Parker Boudreau showed up, I did not recognize him with the, you know, the bald head. Obviously, they shaved his head. He had the neck tattoo thing going on, which I don't think is a real tattoo. I legit did not recognize him. I actually, on Twitter, somebody, it was a random, like, wrestling Twitter, like, happened to mention that it was him, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, because of the shaved head, I needed to look up the recent class of signees, and I was like, is it Brady Booker? No, why would they have shaved off that hair? It's gorgeous. It's got to be Boudreau. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I'm curious to see where this goes too. I was kind of thinking similar, Bray or the, you know, the Wyatt family esque kind of thing is what I was kind of thinking, you know, his followers or something, was kind of where I was landing there. But, yeah, I'd be okay with something like that too, where, you know, it's man from the past and he's going to try and hide, or, you know, he really knows who, he really knows who he is or something like that. I'd be for something for that, like that. Totally.
And I'll be realistic. That is more likely. When I say I'm leaning that way, I think that would be so much more interesting, and that's the impression that tonight's segment gave me. But what you're talking about with the Wyatt family situation is so much more likely, especially because Boudreau is very, very new to this, and unless he's a savant without us having heard anything about it, which I guess is possible, but highly unlikely, I think that getting him on TV is something they've been itching to do, but putting him behind Gacy where he's not going to be asked to do a lot, kind of like the Braun Strowman situation.
When, yeah.
Exactly. And it still looked like he was going to break Roman's arm every time he did whatever that finisher was that he had at first. Blocked it out. I think that's more likely what we're looking at realistically. I just think the other way is so much more intriguing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm kind of a little more intrigued by that myself. So, all right, let's keep things rolling, because, you know, I'd like to get to bed at some point tonight. Area code 615. Let's bring you on and let's talk some wrestling. I think you're on. What's going on?
Yes, sir. Nate and Tom, always good to talk to you. Sean, BFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And, oh, man, it's always good to talk to you guys from NXT. And I will say that after this week, and next week I will not be able to call into the show. My schedule has changed now, and I won't be able. Working late on Tuesdays, so that's kind of sad. I'm actually really sad about that because I missed talking.
That's a bummer, man.
Anyway. Yeah, I know.
I'm going to have to start making some sense tonight then to make it worth it.
No, Tommy, you guys are great, man. You never have to worry about anything. You just talk. I love that you guys talk about it. That's fun. I would say first I wanted to say during the Braun Breaker promo, it is hard to say that name because it is really bad, but it was fine, but it is amazing. I didn't realize till I was listening to it, like, holy crap, that is Rick Steiner's son. Holy crap.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He sounded exactly like, oh, man, it was like, wow, this is kind of cool. Like, this is Rick Steiner back in the day. Oh, wait, no, it's his son, Braun Breaker. Okay, well, anyway. But it was good. Other than the balls, you know, saying balls, like, whatever, you know, it is what it is. I'm with you. I was going to say, I don't think Gacy should beat Ciampa. I think Ciampa should just face Breaker at Halloween Havoc. I mean, even though I'm with you guys, it would make sense for Gacy to take the pin. Like, I would totally understand that. But I just don't want Gacy to beat Ciampa right now. I just don't see it. Even if somebody interfered to win or something, I just don't think that should happen because I don't really like him to be in that spot quite yet. Breaker, I could see. Gacy, not quite yet. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up. The first was with Raquel's promo. Well, first I want to talk about Mandy and Ember because going back to that and leading into the promo, like, I don't know. I just don't think Mandy should basically be beating Ember with a knee and really no other offense. Like, I don't really get that. I mean, I know they're pushing Mandy, and I understand they're trying to get her in the title picture, but it's so hard to believe Mandy in that role. I'm trying to give her a chance, and I'm trying to see it through, but I'm just not sold on it. And so for her to beat Ember just really quick like that with a knee, it's just like, oh, man. So they lost me kind of there. And then when they got to the promo, Tom, Raquel's promo was very even more scripted tonight. I didn't like it even more tonight. I liked her fire and her emotion, but it just, like, she didn't resonate with me. I was like, I don't know. And then Mandy and Toxic Attraction come out, and it's JC Jane, not Lacey Lane. See, got that this time.
There we go.
I didn't really care for any of the promo stuff there, and I'm not into Mandy right now. What do you guys think of the match with her and Ember and then the promo stuff with Raquel?
All right. So we had Ember Moon versus Mandy Rose. That went – let me pull up my notes. Where is it here? That went I don't know. It went 4 minutes and 34 seconds. There we go. It was the first match of the night. You know, I got to admit, I am kind of right there with you in terms of the finish. I was really underwhelmed with the finish. I felt like, you know, Ember Moon, she got a little bit more offense in. The finish just kind of came out of nowhere. You know, Ember was – she got – she hit a couple moves before she went for the Eclipse. So, you know, being her finisher, I was kind of thinking, like, you know, Mandy Rose was going to – obviously probably going to reverse the Eclipse. But then I expected a couple more offensive moves there, just other than a knee to the face, you know, to get the win. I expected Mandy to win, honestly, because of the push that they've been giving, not just her, but Toxic Attraction as a whole. So her winning didn't necessarily you know, come out of nowhere for me. Not that I'm saying it did for you either, Sean, but it didn't come out of nowhere for me. I thought that was kind of the way they were going to go. Ember, I hate to say it, but man, she's kind of just been toiling around, especially since Shotzi got moved up to the main roster. It's sad. You know, she's a former NXT Women's Champion. When she came back to NXT, we all had such high hopes for her. I wanted to see, and I think Tom and Kelly, all of us wanted to see her as a two-time NXT Women's Champion. And now here she is, you know, kind of jobbing to Mandy Rose. Not really jobbing, but losing to Mandy Rose. Mandy is a tough one to get behind in this role because she's been that blonde bombshell for so long. And she's done so many different things on the main roster, even in NXT to a point, but even on the main roster, stuff with Otis and things are just kind of silly. It's hard to get behind that character now in a more serious role. I have to admit, I think she's doing a better job than I gave her, than I would expect out of her. That's not saying I'm 100% behind it or I like it, but considering that's what they're feeding us, I'm actually enjoying her more than I expected, and I think she's doing a better job than I expected. Like, you know, for instance, you know, she tried to shut down the "what" chants tonight. You know, the crowd started chanting "what," and you know, she immediately was like, "Hey, chant what again if you think I'm the sexiest woman alive," or something like that. And the "what" chant stopped for a minute, and they kind of started back up, whatever. But when you go out there in front of a crowd and the crowd starts throwing you off, especially if you've got lines lines memorized and lines you're going to recite, it takes you out of that to then now have to like switch your focus to the crowd, try to shut the focus down, and then go back to your promo. And I felt like she really did a good job at trying to shut the crowd down and then getting right back into the promo. So I really got to give her credit for that, because she's not somebody that I really consider to have strong promo skills. But yeah, with how heavy we saw Toxic Attraction on the show tonight, it was a couple few segments we saw them in, and past few weeks for that matter. Obviously they're really pushing them for this show. Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, they're the ones that I really care about more. They're the ones that I want to see more character development out of. And right now we're getting that all out of Mandy Rose. Now, I'm hoping that we're seeing the character development out of Mandy Rose, so then it kind of trickles down and we start seeing some more character development out of Gigi Dolin and JC Jane as Mandy Rose's new character gets a little bit more established. But I'm kind of thinking that this is really, I hate to say it's a vehicle for Mandy Rose, but I'm almost thinking it might be, unless they're just trying to establish Mandy Rose as a bigger contender to then kind of shine up the new girls here as well. But overall, the promo that Mandy Rose gave, like I said, I think it was better than average for her. Gigi Dolin was meh. She's kind of come across as meh on the mic. I like her in the ring a heck of a lot better than I do on the mic. JC Jane, I think, once again, came out on top in terms of the three of them who had the best mic skills. I was, once again, pretty impressed with JC Jane, what she had to say, her delivery, her cadence. It didn't seem scripted. I mean, obviously it is scripted, but it didn't seem like it was to a large extent anyway. I was okay with that. The match itself, was okay. I'd personally rather see Ember Moon win. I'd rather see her get pushed. But again, considering this is what they're feeding us, I was okay with it. I think I'm kind of okay with Toxic Attraction. They're starting to win me over, but I, again, want to see more development out of Jane and Dolin rather than Rose. Tom.
So this is the main thing that I was looking forward to talking about this week, even before we saw the show, because, we got the signals last week, but that was also branded as a ladies' night kind of thing. NXT is all about the ladies. But in the ads on SmackDown and Raw, they continued, the NXT ads continued to focus on sexuality, Indy's Ursula Andress moment got factored in, and especially Toxic Attraction, because that's the gimmick. And, you know, I say it in sort of a derisive manner, but it's also like, well, the standard is different now, and they're playing those characters, but they're also backing it up with good matches as well, so it's not like they're just one thing, so I'm not trying to harp on that. Like I was sort of joking about doing last week when I was noticing a literal close up of boobs in the ad on SmackDown, Extreme Rules, and Raw. But they kept that rolling, so that's not confined to just Ladies' Night. And especially the main thing that I was looking forward to saying on tonight's show, yes, in part because I thought Kelly was going to be on, and observing such a thing qualifies as harassing him. But JC even said it for me in her promo. They are the new faces of NXT. Not Ciampa, not Breaker, not Raquel. Toxic Attraction, especially Mandy Rose, are the new faces of NXT. Mandy Rose is by far the most prominent person in the ads for NXT. And she, I fully expected Toxic Attraction to open the show in some form tonight. I don't think I would have expected it to just open with a match. Not arguing that, but I thought that maybe a follow-up promo after last week or something. But not surprised at all when they opened the show. I was like, yep, they are the brand right now. And that may be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people, but I think Mandy's backing it up. She's not the best on promos. She was better this week, and I also liked the shutting down of the What Chance and how well she just quickly factored that in and didn't let it throw her off. That's always a great skill to have. But I thought that she backed it up in the ring as well. There was only, like, the focus on her is to a point where it's really got me watching her closely to see how she lives up to the spot that they've given her or that they appear to have given her. And I only noticed one, like if I nitpicked, I only noticed one thing where I was like, oh, that didn't go perfectly. But I thought she was really good in this match. Yes, she has a proven opponent in Ember Moon, but I totally get where you're coming from, Sean, with the Ember Moon thing, and I totally get it. I'm just looking at where Ember Moon has been on the card for a little while now, and it's just like, yeah, this is what she's doing right now, and they're focusing on Mandy, so I'm going to be all right with that because Mandy, in my opinion, is living up to it. And I did, maybe this is just a subjectivity thing, but I really liked the high knee finish. Especially if that was a place where we're establishing it, like, yeah, Mandy and Ember opening a weekly NXT episode with a 4-minute special is not Cena versus Bryan in the main event of SummerSlam, but that's where Bryan debuted his knee. And I distinctly remember being like, wait, that was it. But I do like those impact finish is too broad of a term for it, but just that quick, like I mentioned it about Zion Quinn last week with just like a quick forearm, like flying forearm across the ring. I like that kind of thing. So maybe that's just me, but with how strong Toxic Attraction is being positioned right now, I think JC and Gigi should be thrilled they are hitched to this ride. They probably are. Gigi really does have to work on those promos. And, I want to say that she has to work on her facial expressions as well, but honestly, it's probably going to become, maybe it's already become for some people, just a fun thing to, like, while Mandy's talking, to just look over at Gigi to see what sort of weird ways she's contorting her face in. And JC has a little bit of that too. So even though the promos were awkward-ish for the most part, especially Raquel's, and I can only imagine she was directed this way, but she was cutting the promo to the hard cam with the interviewer, yes. There was an interviewer there, right? And yep. There was also the in-ring camera that they've used for Ciampa a lot, and Adam Cole, you know, the in-ring camera. It's used for a lot of wrestlers. I associate it in the modern era with Ciampa and Cole most. But the camera in the ring is like swooshing from side to side, and she's just staring straight into the hard cam. So, again, I imagine she was probably directed to do that, but that was just –
looked weird.
It was really awkward. But that, all that said, Barrett even name dropped Nexus last week when they did this exact thing. But when Toxic Attraction swarmed the ring and stood on each side of the apron that, you know, that a three person faction can encompass, it looks like Nexus. It looks like the Shield. And this is stuff that people have fond memories of, and I felt like that was yet another signal that we should not be sleeping on how far WWE intends to go with this trio.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they have some high, like a high ceiling for this trio. Between the push, all of the ads, on main roster for NXT are heavily focused on Toxic Attraction. I do. I think that they we're gonna be seeing a lot more of them, and I'm okay with that at the moment. I'm certainly okay with that, and I honestly did not think 3 or 4 weeks ago I would have been. All right, Sean, back to you.
No, and I will say up front, I'm still gonna give it time to breathe. And, you know, I'm not like, I don't want to make it sound like I'm ready to judge and say I don't want I can't accept them ever because that's not fair. I mean, I'm willing to give her – I thought she was better than she has been. I will say that. And so with the three of them, she definitely – it helps her having the two of them with her. I think that helps her. If it was just her by herself, I wouldn't buy her, like, at all. So I'm willing to buy her, you know, as a heel with two people with her that are young and growing and helping her along. I think that's going to be good for her. Raquel just needs to get – I mean, I like her, but she needs to get better right now. And so I hope they – you know. And she's the champion, so that worries me a little bit. I'm curious to see where they – you know. I'm just curious to see if they get – does Mayne end up winning the title because Raquel is just cold right now. The next thing I was going to talk to you guys quick about was – Pete Dunne and, you know, Grimes for, I mean, the time they had, I thought they tried to fit too much into the show tonight. I mean, they had a lot of wrestling, which was good, but it was like too much. Like you guys have said before, I think it's just hard to keep up with everything. Like there's just so much going on and it's like, wow, it's like you're throwing so much at me. And it's like, wow. But Dunne and Grimes was good for what it was. I mean, it was a short match. I assume Dunne was going to win, but I'm glad there was some kind of – I'm kind of glad they had a little interference only because I didn't want Grimes to lose just completely clean, even though Dunn's great and I love Pete Dunne. He's fantastic as a heel. He's a badass. But where do you think they're going with Grimes? And do you think that he ever gets back up? Because I think he's such a good act, and I think he needs – I want him to at least get a title – like at least a title match at some point. Do you think that's in his future, or do you think he's going to have a little bit more time in NXT, and do you think eventually Vince is going to be like, well, let me give him a chance up on the Mayne roster and see what he does? Because, I mean, I think he'll like him with his, you know, his comedy stuff and all the other – and the stuff he can do in the ring is really good anyway, so I think that'll help him. And that's really the Mayne question I had. And, guys, again, you guys are the greatest. Reverend Keith, miss you as always, man. I love hearing you on your calls. And next week will be my last week, so I will get on there and time to be no more for me. So appreciate you guys taking my call,
right,
as always.
All right, Thanks, Sean, man. As always, appreciate it. And we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. What we want, as Adam Cole said, it's not goodbye, just goodbye for now or something like that. Crap, I screwed it up. I forget what he said at the end of the up, up, down, down video. But all right. So yeah, with Cameron Grimes, I got to admit, I think I'm honestly surprised he didn't get called up in the draft. Now, granted, I guess he still could, because I think the draft's going to be continuing. But continued on Raw. That's right. Never mind. My week. This has already been a whirlwind of a week for me, guys. So I'm sorry. No, I'm surprised he didn't actually get called up because. When Vince gets wind of like a comedy character, especially a comedy character that can also work, usually he latches onto them. You know, like R-Truth being one of them. I would love to see some R-Truth and Cameron Grimes interactions. I don't mean that to see like Cameron Grimes being relegated to the 24/7 division, because man, I would absolutely hate to see something like that happen to Cameron Grimes. But man, I just think Cameron Grimes and R-Truth could work some absolute magic together, comedy-wise. I don't want to see the 24/7 division, but I would love to see the two of them work together. I don't know where he's going right now, and kind of, you know, what the plan long term for him is. I'd love to see him with the title around his waist as well, but I also feel like he's one of those characters that doesn't necessarily need it, at least where he is right now. Great, you know, he had the $1 million championship. Well, it's not really a belt or whatever. But his character right now, everybody loves it. He's always got the crowd behind him. He's a solid worker. I really feel like he doesn't necessarily need a title to be an attraction. You know, you got people like Roddy Piper, things like that, that, you know, they never won a belt, but we still talk about them today like they were a champion, you know, and they never were in WWE. So, you know, yeah, I'm not sure exactly where they're going to be going with him, you know, long-term in NXT. But I really feel like his act especially is really molded for the Mayne roster, at least at this point.
I'd like to see him go up sooner rather than later. Selfishly, I'd like to, you know, also like to keep him in NXT as long as possible. But I do think there are some good things in the future for Cameron Grimes. Tom.
Yeah, man. Speaking of the draft, real quick, circling back, John Morrison is on Raw, so Miz and Morrison are still on the same brand.
I looked that up, and I forgot to bring it up myself.
And Miz, of course, you know, being on Dancing on the Stars right now, he was drafted after after the show, after SmackDown, I believe is how that went down. But since that website wouldn't load, and then I just, like, ejected it from my mind, I do agree with Michael's email, I believe, on Frankie going up, or maybe Keith brought that up. I feel like NXT, I thought that NXT was going to be a little bit more represented in the draft. I thought that they were going to want even more new blood than they got. And the people I was considering most to show up, there were no surprises as far as who got the call, but the people that I was most expecting to go up did not. And that includes EO and LA Knight. And I think because that is like such a stacked top of the list, I wasn't even thinking about Cameron Grimes, but of course he's on that list too. He should be. I was thinking Frankie would probably be there after the Raquel match. We've said that over and over. So it was weird that she wasn't drafted, but because they did it the way they did it, it does seem, cause she absolutely, of course, obviously could go up as her own thing. But I think because they did it the way they did it, she could more likely just show up as who she is, John Morrison's wife. So whether that's doing her a service or not, we'll have to see. Does that cover that? Yeah. You mentioned the 24/7 division, and that just I breathed a sigh of relief when Ricochet, who has been appearing in the 24/7 division, got drafted to SmackDown, where that division does not appear. But then I thought, wait a second, is he just still going to be on the same low rung over there on SmackDown, even with the greater exposure on Fox? And I'll wish that he was in the 24/7 division, because at least he was given something to do. But I don't know. We shall see. But yeah, Grimes, it is. I think I agree with everything that you and Sean said about him and this match. It was just sort of thrown out there. It was perfectly consummate for what it was. It made me hope, or not. It didn't make me hope, but Ridge getting drafted made me hope that that Dunn gets freshened up a little bit on not like new gimmick or anything, but just feels a little bit fresher on NXT. I sort of yawn when I see him now. It's felt like the same old thing for quite a while. Even if that same old thing is good, it's just the same old thing. I think the main thing that I noticed here was just that it's yet another, even with the million-dollar storyline behind us, it's yet another crossover segment for Grimes. Even though he was losing, even though it was kind of an unceremonious spot for him to be losing, especially after the popularity that he gained during the million-dollar storyline, it was still the crossover spot. That's still the Grimes spot. That's where they put him. So even though I have no idea what they're going to do with him, they clearly have not forgotten him.
All right. And, next we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to bring, Darrell on. Darrell, what's going on tonight, man? What'd you think of the show? Darrell, are you with us, man? Are you with us?
Yes, I am. My bad. I'm sorry.
There we go. Nah, not a problem, man. Not a problem.
Good
tonight? To hear
you.
Doing well, man.
All right. Tonight's show was pretty interesting. Going kind of how I expected it and how I'm envisioning it. And, Tom, I'm surprised you didn't ask where Dakota Kai, because she didn't get drafted and she's been moved up to the show. So before we see anybody else, they would have to find somewhere to put her first. And she went undrafted. They drafted Aaliyah before they drafted her. So, hey, I thought you would have said something about that.
No, when I saw Zaya's name, I was like, hey, I'm really happy for Zaya. That's great for her. But where's Dakota?
Yeah, it is a little strange. Dakota Kai is just kind of absent.
Yeah, so you're right. I didn't say anything, but it definitely did not go unnoticed.
Got you. Now, one of my first questions is going to be about the outlook of NXT. Now, looking at the matches that we've seen today and some of the finishes and stuff, and I'm going to tie this into a conversation that y'all was having earlier, I'm thinking, like I was stating last week, that they're pushing through some of these new people that they're pushing and dropping, where they're pushing them hard and fast early. And I think by Halloween Havoc, we're going to see all of those people ran through and put back down, and they're going to start back with probably building a rivalry, and you're going to see more of the older crew getting pushed back, or just people, names that they know, just like you've seen a few of them get wins tonight. Even going with now with the title match they're going to have at Halloween Havoc. And they did say if Joe Gracie wins, I don't think he get put in the match. I think he take Ciampa's place. So I don't know how they're going to do that if he ain't going to win the title that night, but that's something else. But seeing that and having that match, I'm thinking that they're going to have that go through, and where you start rivalries or stories where you can have Joe Gracie probably upset for losing the match against Ciampa, and you get Parker Bordeaux or whatever the name they're going to call him. And that's who Rex Steiner will probably feud with. And you give Joe Gracie a big heavy, somebody who Rex could maybe throw around and stuff like that. And then you start them to start building up story lines with more experienced people. What do you guys think about that idea?
So having Joe Gacy and Bron Breakker start? Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with something like that. Are you talking if Breakker wins the title or just after the Ciampa match?
No, Breakker's not going to win the title. Joe Gacy probably keeps him from winning the title, so you can save that and things like that. And that's where you urges him off too into the next feud, so he don't look weak at all for losing the Ciampa.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought you meant, but I wasn't 100% sure. Yeah, I'd be totally fine with something like that. And it certainly makes sense. I certainly don't see Bron Breakker winning and capturing the NXT championship, at least this early on in his career. It's certainly down the road I could see it, but not right now, not 3 weeks from now, Halloween Havoc, that's for sure. But yeah, I could certainly see Gacy, losing next week, not being put into the match at Halloween Havoc and causing Breakker to lose. And if they were to put Cabordreau with Gacy, as we were kind of talking about earlier, you just brought up as well, I could certainly see them, working a match or a feud with Bron Breakker Parker Boudreau and Joe Gacy working a feud with Breakker to kind of give him a heavy to work with. Because, I mean, yeah, sure, he could. I don't think anybody would sneeze at Bron Breakker, just decimating Joe Gacy. I think people would expect that. Parker Boudreau, that's a completely different story. And he would certainly be a monster for Bron Breakker to overcome to get back at the NXT title, title scene at some point too. So I'd be cool with something like that if they were to go down that road. Tom?
Yeah, I agree with you. Gacy is one of those. I mean, I think where he's established right now, again, like I suggested earlier, if he lost to Ciampa and like, 30 seconds, he's not getting buried. It's TV time. It's character advancement for him. He's the kind of person that no matter how many times he loses, he can cut that promo and get right back on. That's what this sort of character excels at. like by design. You know, no matter what version of the character it is, you know, it just has to be delivered sufficiently, which this one so far is. So yeah, that then becomes the question of exactly how is Boudreaux positioned here, and whether he's good at it or not, or whether he's aligned with Gacy or not, I definitely don't foresee him being someone who's going to be thrown around, or someone who they're going to want to be in that position. Maybe his ceiling ends up being Amos, you know, just standing there looking menacing for the most part, and occasionally throwing a kick or something. But we'll see. Yeah, I think that would be an agreeable circumstance for the near future. Sure.
Sure. All right. And anything else for us, Darrell? What do you get next?
Okay, now I want to go to again with my theory of they're going through all the younger talent right now who they were pushing earlier and going to eventually slow down and start pairing them off and tell more stories and get back to our usual NXT. Odyssey Jones and LA Knight. I was found the match interesting because I wanted to see, and that's something that they told in a few weeks ago. A story between these guys and LA Knight was kept attacking Odyssey after he got in his way. And then they brought Chase U out there to distract Odyssey, which that was a continuation of stories, even from the wedding when he handed him and pushed him down and all of that. So that's another way of saying that they're going to start focusing on those younger guys together and then find out who rise out of that crew, who they can start pushing as a mainstream way. But I'm seeing with LA Knight because, yeah, he did take that loss earlier to Bron Breakker, but they are continuing to keep him strong. And you would have thought he would have been somebody that they would have sent up, but they didn't. So I think he's somebody who could potentially be a challenge for Ciampa after Halloween Havoc. What do you guys think, and how do you think about Odyssey Jones and Chase U being linked up? It could be potential of those young guys that they're going to see who they're going to push after however the rivalry goes.
Yeah. So who was it that you were saying you want to see against Ciampa?
LA Knight.
LA Knight, okay. Yeah, so LA Knight I think is – I mean, absolutely main event material. I think he probably should get an NXT title run, honestly, before he goes to the main roster if he was not part of this draft, you know, which he clearly wasn't. I think he probably should have an NXT title run, at least a North American title run, to kind of, you know, build him up a little bit more. But I think, you know, he's that act, even when he debuted in NXT, I feel like he was main roster ready, hands down. So yeah, I could certainly see him going up against Ciampa, something like that. Maybe I don't want to say it. I could see him dethroning Ciampa. Maybe kind of, sort of see him dethroning Ciampa. It wouldn't shock me if he did, but I think it would be a good opponent for Ciampa. I'm not sure who I really want to see Ciampa, or who Ciampa's going to necessarily, you know, drop the title to. But yeah, I would certainly be down with you know, with something like that. Odyssey Jones, you know, which you're kind of talking about, you know, partnering off, you know, some of the talent. You know, I think that's probably kind of how we're going to see some things go, you know, go on down the road. You know, we're probably going to see some newer talent get paired off with some newer talent. We're going to also see him get paired off with some older talent. And that's kind of part of the developmental system, really, is, you know, when you get some of these newer guys, you pair them off with the, you know, more seasoned talent, you know, it's still a learning experience. They're learning from these guys. So yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that, you know, that happening. And at that point, it probably will start feeling a little bit more like the NXT that we are used to, because these new faces are, you know, we're already starting to get used to them, you know, Bron Breakker and Von Wagner and things like that. They're people that we're kind of starting to get used to, maybe Von Wagner a little bit less so than, you know, Breakker at least, but, or even Odyssey Jones for that matter, because Van Wagner's only been around, you know, a few segments. It seems like even though he's put in a more prominent spot, we see like less of him than like Odyssey Jones, but I don't know. I could be wrong. Could just be perception. But yeah, I love Odyssey Jones too. The character, you know, he's still green. Obviously, you know, he's still kind of got some work to do in the ring. Not work to do, learning to do in the ring, I guess a better way to put it. But he's got charisma for days. He's got a $1 million smile, you know, and just the strength and everything he's got. I mean, he's got, I think he's got star written all over him. I keep thinking of him as a cross between Keith Lee and Mark Henry. I can see a lot of the agility and speed that you kind of see out of Keith Lee, but with the same type of power you get out of Mark Henry. So that's kind of like what I see out of him. And I think that is a great, great mashup of characters, if you will. I think it's a great spot to be at. So I'm really high on Odyssey Jones myself. Tom, on all of that stuff and a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So like I said, LA Knight was at the top of my list of people, my list that doesn't actually exist anywhere other than in my mind, but he was at the top of the list of people I thought were going to be drafted. So I was surprised that he was not. But I especially mention it, because for, maybe it's a weird reason, but you know, it's a very wrestler thing to have, takeover gear, or, you know, pay-per-view gear, Mania gear, and then maybe you'll wear it one more time, like at Raw after Mania, or like Adam Cole would wear the green trunks, and then he'd wear the green trunks one more time, you know, for the next taping or the next match he had, or maybe he'd introduce a new color at a takeover and then continue to wear it. But that was where that happened. And LA Knight did the Hogan gear, like the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks kind of gear, he did that on Takeover, and then the gear went away. It was just Takeover gear, but he wore it again tonight. So I was like, oh, this is his farewell. He didn't get drafted, but they're doing something. He wore the Mega Powers gear for a reason. And nope, he got a win. You know, however tainted that win was, although, I mean, Odyssey Jones was protected in at least three different ways. So that's all fine. But yeah, no, LA Knight sticks around. I think if LA Knight is to challenge for Ciampa's championship, it will have to involve Bron Breakker. It will have to involve who else would be. LA Knight isn't really tied up with anybody else right now. Let's just say Bron Breakker. It because everything right now, even if it is as tertiary as Von Wagner, you know, helping Kyle O'Reilly in his Pete Dunne feud, you know, everything has blood in it. So you're not seeing, you know, like, yeah, we got Grimes versus Dunne tonight, but that's all mixed in with the Kyle stuff. So that's why I say Von Wagner's kind of tertiary there, but for now. But yeah, I think that's the way they're looking at it. So I think it would just have to, I don't think we would get just Knight versus Ciampa with no one else involved.
All right, Jarrell, what else you got for us tonight?
Okay. Now, seeing that they're going to set up Swerve and he'll finally do his first title defense on next week's show against Escobar, I'm thinking Escobar wins it. And then after Halloween Havoc, that's when we start seeing stuff calm down. And I think we probably will get a takeover soon, and they'll build up to a takeover after that, and we won't get these – we still probably get all these matches, but they'll be a little bit different, couple of squashes here and there, training back, but you start getting more storyline and start seeing the scene set, people set in divisions, people put in certain ways and things of the sort like that, because I'm liking, you can start to see the process of things starting to get built. They needed to wait to after the draft and certain stuff and introducing all these new people to set the lineup to however they want it now, so they can start telling the stories that they want to tell. Where do you guys see them taking that North American title after this once Swerve lose.
All right, so we did get a we got Swerve and Hit Row showing up in a vignette. It was actually kind of the counter vignette earlier in the night where Legado del Fantasma showed up and kind of did some essentially talked about how Hit Row was running away to SmackDown to get away from Legado del Fantasma, where they Hit Row obviously just got drafted. Hit Row kind of responded to that responded to that, and Legado del during the sorry, I'm getting all both of these segments confused here. During the Legado del Fantasma segment, Santos Escobar challenged for the North American title. Swerve responded to that, and we're gonna see that match happen at some point, sooner rather than later, I'm sure. I don't really know 100% where they're gonna go with the NXT North American title, and I think that's going to, or at least after this, I think obviously Escobar is going to win it. Hit Row, they're now on SmackDown. So Swerve being the NXT North American champion, well, I mean, where I guess they could still do it if Swerve wanted to do double duty. I am just kind of assuming that the title is going to be moving on here to Santos Escobar, which I'm completely on board for. Legado del Fantasma, they haven't quite seemed as important as they did when Escobar was the cruiserweight champion. And they made the cruiserweight title really feel important, really feel special. Swerve, man, he's been the champion now for what? 98 days. I think it was 91 days last week, 98 days now without a defense. He hasn't had a title defense. He's won the belt and he hasn't had a title defense yet. Which is absolutely insane. It's crazy to me we have Shane Strickland here in NXT as our North American champion, and he is not defending this title. Great for the heel character, because they're even acknowledging it on TV last week that he still hasn't defended it. Hit Row did it in a promo. I'd like to see somebody try to challenge him for that. Yeah, I'd like to see that title kind of get back into circulation. Let's put it that way. With all the new blood and everything, kind of coming up here, I'm not really I haven't really thought that far ahead. As Tom kind of said earlier in the night, he's not super great at looking like 10 moves ahead either. Neither am I. So I haven't really put a whole lot of thought into what would be happening with the North American title afterwards. But in terms of right now, I certainly see Legado del Escobar, holding that title. I'm kind of hoping to see him with a relatively lengthy reign with that belt, kind of do something like he did with the cruiserweight title, elevate it up a little bit, because I feel like the North American title right now is really, it's not anything important in NXT. I mean, it's a nice heat magnet for Swerve right now, but I kind of feel like that should be almost like that workhorse title, the Intercontinental, the U.S. title. It should be kind of that workhorse title in NXT, and it's not right now, which I think is kind of by design, at least for the heat on Swerve anyway. If not by design, maybe just happy accident. But in terms of where it goes afterwards, I'm not sure. Tom, do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely agreed regarding what Escobar could do for the North American title. The only thing against that is that I feel like, he would have a bunch of new challengers, but I just worry that it would feel like been there, done that, I don't know, maybe it's just not creative thinking on my part, because I envision it being, so often I think no, he's not, even though it seems preordained, and it has seemed preordained for a while, that he is going to be the next holder of that title. I keep on in my mind thinking no, they're not going to put it back on him. And then I have to remind myself he hasn't held it. That was the cruiserweight championship, but he made it feel that important. That was one of the better cruiserweight championship runs in the existence of a very unimportant belt. He made it seem important. So, and he feuded with Swerve for a lot of it. So, there's a lot of redundancy here. Because it feels so preordained and has for a while, I feel like I might enjoy some kind of surprise, like somehow Zion Quinn gets it instead, or somehow Odyssey Jones gets it instead, or maybe even something wacky like Swerve retains and just does double duty for a while. Like, Swerve retains the belt because that's what no one was expecting, and that's the only reason why it happens, just because it was not,
Swerve,
not to be expected.
Swerve with a Swerve, maybe?
There you go. And Swerve culture is not a reason to do anything. It's not a good reason to do anything. So even though I'm saying that I might enjoy that in the moment, it probably isn't the best idea for the long term. So yeah, Santos should probably just take the belt. That would be just swell. It would make all the sense in the world. And just as for the Hit Row video specifically, this is the most I believe an act has acknowledged their call up in a long time. Like, we got Asuka's farewell. We got, I don't know, like it got mentioned for a while at the beginning of Full Sail NXT, like, hey, of course Sami Zayn wants to wrestle Bo Dallas for the NXT championship because he's seen people like Seth Rollins and Big E go up to the main roster, and they would acknowledge that more. And it's not like it never gets mentioned anymore, but they were really, I mean, they showed it on the screen, and I like that acknowledgement. Of just being realistic, just like, yeah, we know what NXT is. It is the success when somebody moves on from it and gets promoted. And furthermore, I love, and it doesn't happen nearly enough when wrestlers are talking about wins and losses, going to the pay window, why they want to be champion, money being an element of that. And I'm not just talking about Happy Corbin or anything, but just the common acknowledgement that is a driving factor in a lot of this. And I loved that Hit Row, in their way, was just like, yeah, you say that we're running away, but we're going after the bigger money, 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 money. And I want to say that's the first time in NXT history that a call-up has acknowledged that. I mean, unless there's something, I don't know, maybe like a Bobby Roode. Well, no, Bobby Roode was so focused on using his character's money to change NXT's image to be more like the main roster, even though he never said it that way, but it was a good gimmick because that's what it was. He wanted to take, you know, our NXT and turn it and make it more main rostery. But I think this is the first time in NXT history that a call-up has openly acknowledged, like, yeah, now we're going to make more money because we got the call-up. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I kind of like that whole video tonight because of the acknowledgement for the call-ups. The money thing, that was actually, like, I probably wouldn't have brought it up if you didn't, but that was something that really stood out for me for a couple different reasons. A, because I thought it was just a great line, great way for, you know, Top Dollar and Hit Row to kind of get a little more heat, kind of get a little under the skin of the NXT fans, if you will. But at the same time, I guess kind of looking at it from the other perspective, it also makes NXT feel a lot lesser again. You know, and again, I know I have to start looking at and analyzing NXT as a lesser third brand once again, not as equal as they wanted it to be for a while. But it just kind of like, it was a little odd, well, not odd, but it was striking to me. That, you know, they're like, yeah, now we're going to be making more money. And it just kind of, you know, a little bit poo-pooing on NXT and making it look a little bit lesser. But again, probably by design, and I think it was great. I thought it was a great line from Top Dollar. And I'm really looking forward to see what they can do on the main roster. I'm actually going to probably tune in specifically for Hit Row. And I'm not just saying that either. Hit Row is one of the things I look forward to on NXT on a weekly basis. I'm really sad to see them go, but at the same time, with the exception of B-Fab, I think the rest of the act is completely main roster ready. B-Fab is main roster ready in terms of her promo skills, mic work and all that. Her in-ring work, God, I hope she's not going to be doing much in-ring stuff on Raw or on SmackDown, unless there's a lot of work that gets done there. Cause I think if she does and the wrong people see it, could be bad news for B-Fab. You know, but is what it is there. But overall, I'm really looking forward to see what Hit Row does on SmackDown, and I'm hoping that they just don't get lost in the mid card. I hope that they're actually a decent, like, threatening stable on the main roster. Darrell, get one more thing for us, or shall we move on?
Last thing, and yeah, I hope so. They're something on the main roster as well, and left alone and not giving other people words on what they think people like that will say either. So that's the biggest thing. So hopefully, but my last thing would be, I asked for this, and they finally did it. We was able to get a promo, and the Diamond Mine was able to be told who they are by Malcolm Bivens, and I liked it. And I feel like this is the beginning of where they starting to slow things down and tell stories. I like how they let him break everything down. This is why we don't see a definite tag team division, because you got a tag team in the Creed Brothers and Escobar group, that tag teams that haven't got back in the tag team division and stuff like that. So this is where I'm feeling like after they go through all these new faces, you're going to start seeing some of these people start breaking off and getting into stuff in the story. And this was the perfect way to start it, by letting Malcolm Bivens cut a promo and tell you who everybody is, what their focus, what their drive is, and even give accolades to Hachiman, the coach, and stuff like that, and just telling everything about that and his favorites, the Creed Brothers, and stuff like that. So I enjoyed that promo. And again, I feel like NXT 2.0 will be the real 2.0 after Halloween Havoc, once we get past these new faces who they probably had to push these first few weeks, and now the draft is over with. Now you know who you have and who you don't have, and you can continue to go up down the road and build how you want to build. What do you guys like about that promo? And that's it for me.
Tom, let me I'll throw over to you for that promo, because Corbin seems to be making a lot of noise.
Well, I'll talk slow then, because I won't really, because that would be awful. But I don't have much here other than just to say I agree. This sort of thing belongs on the show, and so it was good. I agree that I agree with everything Darrell said, and I'll just add that, I mean, it's still so far so good with the new version of the Diamond Mine out of the gate. Every single week, it was just sort of like laughing at them before we recorded, and then trying to stifle that so I could say, well, in the long term, I'm optimistic for Tyler Rust on the podcast. And now it's like, no, I'm looking forward to seeing what Ivy Nile does. I'm very eager for the next time the Creed Brothers smash someone. And then, yeah, I'll watch a Roddy match every now and again. It's a Roddy match a month keeps the doctor away.
Roddy match a month keeps the doctor away. Okay, I'll go with that. No, I was waiting for this type of a thing for Diamond Mine. Malcolm Bivens is a fantastic mouthpiece, as we know. This, I think, is exactly what Diamond Mine needed. It reminded us of who everybody is, who's in the faction. I forget actually if it was you that pointed out, or it was Darrell that pointed out, but they shone a light on Hachiman, which they really haven't done yet. I mean, even I think last week or the week before, I called him the other guy because I literally could not think of his name. I'm glad they shone a light on him and kind of, you know, give that coach role, because I don't think we're going to see him in the ring. I mean, maybe, but we haven't yet. We haven't seen any sort of physicality or anything out of him. I don't know anything about the guy other than he's in Diamond Mine and he's the coach. If he's cleared, he can wrestle or whatever. But I think this is exactly what they needed. It gave everybody a reminder of who everybody is. We didn't really learn anything new about any of the members of Diamond Mine here in this promo either. But it was just a quick reminder of who everybody was, and it was done in a very done in such a way that I think was effective, and it left just a good taste in everybody's mouth for Diamond Mine. It doesn't make it like. I keep looking at Diamond Mine almost like Undisputed Era Light. And I think that's just simply because Roddy's in it. It's completely different beast than Undisputed Era. But that's kind
it's
of
funny.
My...
It's funny you say that, just because that exact phrase ran through my mind regarding Toxic Attraction tonight.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, and I can see that too. That, you know, absolutely.
Okay.
I could absolutely.
He's either going to patronize me with what you said, or he's going to try to kill me.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Undisputed Era Light with the just kind of the antics of Toxic Attraction and the way that they're acting, you know, and stuff. Yeah, I can certainly draw the comparisons there too. But in my head, I kind of see them see Diamond Mind anyway as the replacement for Undisputed Era, you know, at least on the male roster. And I think it's simply because, you know, one faction left, another faction came in, and they both have Roderick Strong. But to get kind of out of that, and I think some other, because I've also seen other people, you know, online on Reddit. I spend a lot more time on Reddit, on Squared Circle, than I care to admit. Like, I've seen a lot of people, you know, make that comparison too. And I think they needed something like this to kind of separate themselves and kind of stand out a bit more, just stand out and kind of separate from, you know, those Undisputed Era vibes, things like that. But I loved this video package here with Malcolm Bivens, Diamond Mine. I want to hear Malcolm Bivens just go. Like, I would love for them to give him a live mic and just like, just, there's a story like Paul Heyman tells about, you know, he was going out to cut a shoot promo on Vince McMahon, and he's like, Vince, you want me to tell you, you know, what I'm actually going to say out there? And Vince's like, no, just go out and draw me money. And man, I would love to see them just hand Malcolm Bivens a mic and be like, go out there and draw me money, kid. Because
oh,
I think
yeah,
kill it. Absolutely.
And they definitely let him do that at some house shows that I was not at. So the only time I've seen him do that is at instead of, or maybe it was in addition to, but it was definitely before a taping. So I want to say instead of a dark match, they had Malcolm Bivens come out and cut a promo about Bivens Enterprises. And when that was what it was. Yep. And I don't even remember what he said, or if he was doing his usual, like the Bivens that we know on social media. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The other thing that, you know, maybe this is just my daughter, but I think I even mentioned it on the podcast that one time my daughter was watching the Diamond Mine backstage bit where they were like working out and Bivens was saying something about something. And she goes, so is Diamond Mine where people train to get good enough to be on NXT? And I definitely laughed at it, but I was also even thinking, like, even before we knew what it was, I was wondering, are we underestimating by thinking that this is going to be a faction and this is actually going to be a whole new show that is the, you know, now yeah, what NXT 2.0 is. But I was wondering if, like, is this NXT Evolve and they're finally going to show it to us under this new name? So yeah, I absolutely see where she got that impression. And so something like tonight's video helps make that distinction as well.
100%. No. And yeah, I remember you actually talking about seeing Bivens talking about Bivens Enterprises, like during that live show. I remember you bringing that up. All right, so moving on, we got a couple other things that we haven't talked about. We did talk about Ember Moon and Mandy Rose, so I can cross that off my list. We did talk about we talked about LA Knight and Odyssey Jones. I don't have anything else to add to that. Do you?
No, Andre Chase was there. I'm glad that's continuing.
Cool. Yeah, me too. We did talk about that. All right, we got a couple of things. We have the in-ring debut of Tony D'Angelo. It is Tony. It's not Tommy, right? Tony D'Angelo.
Right.
Tommy D'Angelo is the main character in the video game Mafia. I keep getting confused. And I'm probably going to keep getting that confused. It's one of my favorite video games. He debuted against a gentleman by the name of Malik Blade, who I believe it was also his first match on NXT. I do not remember seeing this gentleman before on NXT, at least under the name Malik Blade. Man, I don't know what they're doing lately with some of these names, but Malik Blade. You've got Darth Malik from, what was it, Star
Trek or Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic. Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah, Darth Malak. That's where I know the name Malak from. He must be a Knights of the Old Republic guy too, if he's using that as a name. But man, Malak Blade, come on! If I have never heard a create a character wrestler name before in my life, that is it. Don't like the name, but whatever. Match wasn't for him; it was for Tony D'Angelo. I actually liked this match more than I thought I would. And I'm kind of surprised at that because it was a lot of just rest holds and things like that. I'd say probably a quarter of the match was like rest holds, but that aside, the crowd was really into it. The crowd is really behind Tony D'Angelo. And I thought he had some great charisma. He had some great in-ring work as well, like kind of begging off, almost doing like a Ric Flair thing where he's kind of, you know, on his knees in the corner, like, no, you know, don't attack, you know, don't hit me. And then clearly gets right back up and, you know, kind of does a little bit of a heel move. The thing is Tony D'Angelo comes off as a heel character. He plays a heel in the ring, but man, the crowd got right behind him. It's like I feel like they're positioning him as a face, and I feel, you know, even with his vignettes and everything, I still feel like they're positioning him as a face and just his mannerisms, and obviously he's trying to hype the crowd up, things like that. But he comes in, but the character itself, I mean, he's a mobster, right? Like it's a heel gimmick. I feel like there's probably going to be a turn somewhere down the line for this character. There has to be with this gimmick, but. I got to admit, I like it. You know, like I said last week, you know, even with the last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian. And so I kind of do latch on to that Italian mobster type character. It's something I like, something I enjoy. It's fun. But I don't know where the ceiling is for him. I said North American title last week. This week, after seeing him, I think maybe not. Maybe challenge for it, but not win it type of deal. But that's even a little far-fetched for me. But I can certainly see him as somebody that the fans latch on to, almost kind of like Cameron Grimes before Cameron Grimes, you know, started doing the million-dollar stuff. People wanted to see him every week. You know, he was entertaining, and that's kind of at least what I see right now, at least for this first, you know, in-ring debut in front of a live crowd type of a deal. I want to see a little bit more before I, say definitively where I see him slot in on the card. But that's what I see right now. What did you think of this match against Malak Blade?
Malak Blade, Joshua somebody or other, I forget, I didn't write it down, from Devon's school right here in Orlando.
Nice.
Sawyer Rec also trains there, as do a lot of other people, but I just really like Sawyer Rec, and she should totally, I've been saying this for a while, she should totally win the Mayhem on Mills Championship from Troy Hollywood at their next event, Halloween, what do they call it? Oh, man, botched the plug. I forget what it's called, but their Halloween event is coming up soon. Triple Threat with Sawyer Rec, Troy Hollywood, and Snoop Strikes. I liked this too quite a bit. Mandy Ember is not going to get beat for my match of the night, but I think this went very well for Tony, and especially in regard to crowd acceptance, because this crowd has just been especially awful. It's so easy to beat up the Full Sail crowd, and they are still the Full Sail crowd. It's all still the same people. But like these people, if you're VIP and you're listening to NXT 8 years back, you're hearing us talk about how quickly they accept new acts. Like it's actually hard for Shawl's husband. I always do this. I forget his name, and then I say Aiden English. It's very difficult for him to keep his heat with this new heel character that he's debuted 8 years ago, because the crowd just instantly loves him, and they're instantly like, "Yeah, you found your thing. This is great. We like you because it's cool to do that." Same thing with Tyler Breeze, and Tyler Breeze is a bit more adept at working that, but. at least at that point in their careers. But this crowd now has been rejecting everything, and so a lot of the same people are still there. I say a lot, a decent handful of the same people are still there. These are the same people that loved Aiden English the second time that he came out singing to them, and now Tony D'Angelo comes out there and they love him right away. I think a lot of it is because the character is so. He's leaning into it so much, and the company is leaning into it so much. Like, yeah, what you think of when you think of a Chicago gangster, that's everything this guy is. We're going to make sure that he seems like he's a young member of the family, so he probably hasn't killed anybody, but you know,
at
it's
least
still,
not
it's
yet.
Still, yeah, right. So, but yeah, I think that's why. You know, people are doing the cliche hand gesture, and I think that's why people are getting into it, because it is a little ridiculous and it's fun. I think that, yeah, this just reminded me of what we talked about on 8 years back in a very positive way in that regard. And I feel like it's not just the flag on his shoulder, but, you know, he reminded me a bit of Rusev in the sense that he's probably playing too hard into this the gimmick based on nationality, even though I was just saying that the gimmick based on nationality is part of the reason why the crowd probably got into him as much as they did. But Rusev leaned into that so much, and of course, as a character, he was written to just be, you know, like, yes, they called him the Bulgarian Brute, but he really was brutish as a character, and, like, people talk to him like he's an animal, and like, he doesn't know how to use language to speak. He's that kind of character in the early days. So I feel like D'Angelo will probably, well, I don't know if this will happen, but I feel like ideally he will gradually downplay stuff like that until he levels off at a point where he's still recognizably himself and everything that we liked about him. But, you know, not as cartoonish. Also, I wrote down really nice finisher. I feel like I should know, like, what sort of, like, fisherman twist buster or whatever you want to, you know.
I was going to call it a fisherman buster myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever that was, looked real nice. He got into it smoothly and hit it real smoothly. The one thing I worry about is that I'm setting myself up for disappointment, because he showed here, as we expected based on his background, that he would do well in the ring. But what I really want this to be is that, yes, he is a babyface, and we like him, and we especially like him when he does so well in the ring, and he gradually works his way up the ladder to get a really big match. But then, you know, his cousin Handsome Charlie comes in and says, hey, the family says you got to take the fall. We're betting on the other guy. And, you know, the numbers are right. It's time, Tony. And Tony's got to take the fall, but he doesn't want to, because, you know, he could have been a contender. Like, that's what I want out of this, and I'm not going to get it, so I'm going to be disappointed. But,
right.
But yeah, excellent debut for Tony D'Angelo tonight.
Yeah, and going back to the finisher, you know, one thing that I meant to bring up, and I forgot, I like the fact that they kind of stuck with the whole thing, because, you know, his family, you know, down to the docks, you know, when he, you know, fishing,
yeah.
Down to the docks, fisherman suplex. So I like that continuity with the character, fisherman suplex into the fisherman buster, I guess you would call it. That's at least what I was going to call it, as a fisherman buster. So I like that continuity. It's not often that I pick up on little details like that. And I was like, oh, fisherman suplex, docks. All right, cool. That's great. I was proud of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he showed up in
the
Last Legends segment later.
Segment.
And she said, oh, I liked him in that new Sopranos movie.
Yeah, right.
Terrible. Terrible.
Oh, God.
And just because I have nothing else to say about that one, I will mention that this is the point where Brady Booker actually showed up, yes, still with his beautiful hair. And it's not really that great. It's, you know, nice head of hair, though. Should not shave it off like Parker Boudreau did his. But also, Dimitri Jackson, Rhea Ripley's boyfriend, Action Jackson. He is a wrestler locally, and seeing him sitting there, I was like, huh, is this, yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know. I guess there's so much that I don't understand about, you know, people that are adjacent to the Performance Center at getting these little bitty spots on TV, like Jason Cade constantly showing up as an NXT security guard, and I'm like, why don't they sign Jason Cade? He's freaking awesome. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, man, no, I hear you. All right, let's see. What else we got tonight? So we also had Indy Loomis, Indy Hart. They're still calling her Indy Hartwell, but, I mean, I figured they might actually change the last name. But, no, Indy Hartwell versus Mei Ying. Indy Hartwell had Persia, oh, God, I don't remember her last name. Persia, I just wrote down Persia. Her best friend, Persia, in her corner, and Mei Ying had Boa in hers. This match, you went, I think it was about 4 minutes or so. I can pull up the time here momentarily. It went, oh, sorry, 2 minutes and 53 seconds. And we did see Indy Hartwell go over, which was a little shocking to me, to be completely honest with you. This was the first time we saw Mei Ying in the ring. We didn't, and I figured they probably would have made a bigger deal about it, and they didn't. So I'm right. This is the first time we've seen her wrestle, right? I'm not just forgetting something.
You are forgetting one other match she had, yeah.
Okay, so I guess I am forgetting something. It was a few weeks ago.
It was forgettable.
Yep, that's right. But, you know, what I don't understand here with you know, obviously, you know, Xia Li gets called up. So that kind of takes a little bit of the shine out of the Tian Sha stable anyway, because, you know, you get one of your – really, I feel like the whole stable was revolving around her, and now she's gone. So you get a little bit of shine you're taken away there. But you get Mei Ying losing tonight. You had Boa losing either last week or the week before. And – I just don't know what they're going to do with this. They spent all this time building up the stable, and just kind of lately now they've just been losing. And I don't feel like they were really on a winning streak either. So unless this loss kind of leads into, Tian Sha, you know, Mei Ying and Boa, I guess the two remaining members of Tian Sha, kind of leads into them, like, I guess, kicking it into next gear and really kind of showing some sort of next level of Tian Sha or whatever. I don't know. Like, I'm confused by this booking here. I felt like Mei Ying was going to be like this unstoppable force. Nobody's going to beat her. You know, maybe she even gets up. I hate to say NXT champions. I hate to see like an Alexa Bliss type character as a champion. You know, that's kind of how I thought they might book this, at least as an unstoppable force, you know, maybe get the title, maybe not. But now here she is losing right off the bat. It just seems weird to me. I thought they'd affect this faction a little bit more given all of the time and the production that they put into some of those vignettes, whether it was them, you know, just kind of training or also some of the cartoon stuff that they did. It was just, they put a lot into it, and now I don't feel like they're getting anything out of the stable. Tom.
Yeah, it does honestly make me wonder. I mean, we've said before, like, oh, does this loss mean that Tian Sha is going to come back stronger? But they've been losing a lot. And I say they, that's been
Boa.
Yeah.
I feel like a broken record.
Yeah, but then you get the Mei Ying loss tonight, and it's just, why? I don't know why, because Indy Hartwell's got other stuff going on. Like, when I was thinking of people who could alternately win the North American Championship, Dexter Lumis came to mind, and then I thought, you know what, it's already enough with what's going on with Indy. That hasn't run its course yet to the point where they need to do something else with it. So I feel like Indy's, like, not that I don't want to see her in the ring, and not that I don't want to see her winning, but you put her up against Mei Ying, and she's not going to lose much by losing to Mei Ying. Everybody who's lost to Tian Sha recently has been protected because of the steam was used in the finish. So that's what I expected to happen here. But then you get Persia Parada. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but
yeah,
Persia Parada.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
I didn't jump in because I wasn't certain of it, but here I go, Parada. It just sounds like too basic of a pronunciation, but I look at the way it's spelled, and I'm like, well, okay. Is it worth having Persia – I don't know. Is it worth having Mei Ying lose? It's not. It's not, because this was the other – sloppy thing on the show. The one sloppy thing was Robert Evans, whatever the heck his name is, Robert Stone, being able to just rebook a match on the fly. And this was very sloppy because Persia shoved Indy in full view of referee Aja Smith. And it's already weird to me when there's contact between like somebody who's at ringside and the wrestler that they are aligned with, because like the alignment is not written as part of the rules. Like if the referee's like, oh, well, that person's an enemy of the person that they touched, so that's a disqualification, then why isn't it a disqualification if there's contact between somebody that they are aligned with? Which also, it's like, if I want to go further down that rabbit hole, which maybe I shouldn't, it's like, are the referees psychic and they know that the people at ringside aren't going to turn on the people because the alignment is not set in stone? I'm supposed to know that because they're supposed to get involved, you know, on the outside, and the referee isn't supposed to know about it. So this is just sloppy for so many, you know, no matter which way I look at it, it's so sloppy that Persia is just allowed to shove Indy out of the way. And that's fine because she's friends with Indy and Aja Smith knows that. So it wasn't interference. It's not a disqualification. So that's just, yeah, this was very ill-conceived.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It was between that and then the rebooking of the Frankie Monet match. You know, certainly a couple of sloppy things there tonight, but no, I you know, largely I was okay with it. I don't know. I would kind of like to see Indy stand on her own, or at least I guess on her own with her husband Dexter Lumis. It kind of seems weird that they're bringing in, you know, her best friend here, Persia, because all of a sudden the way is now kind of gone. You got Austin Theory up on the main roster. You got Johnny Gargano seemingly kind of maybe taking a little bit of time off to hang out with his wife. Candice LeRae is going to be off TV, obviously, due to pregnancy. So I don't know if like they just think she can't hang on her own and they need to put her with somebody or what. But it was kind of it was interesting to me that like there was just like no mention of the way tonight. There was no follow up of, you know, Gargano and LeRae kind of following the you know, the honeymoon or anything like that, other than just a brief conversation between Persia and Indy. But yeah, you know, otherwise
I would say that, yeah. So I would say that Persia's probably the one who's being put with someone rather than Indy being put with someone. But I see where you're coming from with it, and I do agree with you in essence. And I want to hear what you're about to say that I cut you off before you got to say it. But I will also ask, do you think, just because it's in the back of my mind, do you think that Qian Sha is in the minds of the people writing NXT right now, something where they're like, yeah, we tried it for a while and this is 2.0 now. It's going to go by the wayside.
So first, all I was just going to say was otherwise I was okay with the segment. That was literally all I was going to say.
It was worth the wait.
Yes. But you know, that certainly could be with Tian Sha, where this is, you know, NXT 2.0, they're going in a completely different direction now. Yeah, maybe. And you know, Tian Sha just kind of goes by the wayside. Maybe we see Mei Ying, that character, go away altogether. We see Boa do something else completely. And, you know, Mei Ying re-debuts as Karen Q, or, you know, Karen R, because they need to change everything. I don't know why R. Karen X, Karen S, T. I don't know. Pick a letter. But you know, we see something like that. I could certainly see something like that happening, because it's like, this is a completely different direction for NXT. They're getting away from a lot of that kind of more cinematic stuff. And I think a lot of the cinematic stuff too was simply because there was no crowd and they were just trying different things. But now that there is a crowd, you know, maybe the crowd, and granted, I'm not really paying attention to crowd responses as I used to, because I think because of the COVID era, I got so ingrained in my head that all of the the crowd responses I'm hearing are fake. So it's like I think I kind of trained myself to not pay as close attention to crowd responses while I'm watching the show and writing my – well, at least the live report anyway tonight as I would if I was just watching the show. But you know, maybe they're not getting the same response or the response they thought they were going to get. But I do think that in this new NXT 2.0 environment, Tian Sha does feel like they're a little they just don't belong. They don't fit. So it does kind of seem like a bit of an outcast. I could see them kind of separating them a little bit down the line. Because you know, like you said, we always say every time somebody in Tian Sha gets a loss, well, maybe they'll come back stronger, and they never do. I've said that. I want to say I've said that at least five or six times about Xia Li. I know I said that about Bo when he lost. I said it again tonight. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Interesting to see where it goes for sure. All right, so that does it for matches. We touched on Lash Legend kind of, sort of, a little bit there. Really, that's about it. We had a couple other backstage segments that went on kind of, but we already touched on the matches and the people involved. So I think with that, I'm going to make the executive decision to wrap things up here tonight and say, hey, that was our show, guys. Thanks for listening. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses. Tonight I wrote the live report for Kelly, and that's up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to do so. Tom, who are you?
So disrespectful that you skipped over Von Wagner speaking. I mean, he worked so hard reading.
Oh, yeah.
He spent weeks reading Paradise Lost to learn how to speak, and he finally opened his mouth on tonight's show, and you just skipped right over it, Nate. No,
I did. I did.
I forget whether he spoke in the little like CrossFit.
I don't think he did. I think tonight was the first time he spoke.
Yeah,
and it wasn't good.
No. Like, oh man, I think he did a better Frankenstein's monster performance than Robert De Niro. People seemed weirded out that he was using a sledgehammer on a giant tire, and I'm like, have you seen anybody work out over the past 15 years? Like, this is what people do now. And Wade even mentioned that it's a reference to his father, since he's a second generation. Wayne Bloom, I think, is his father's name. And because he's from the part of the country that he's from, I keep on thinking that – and maybe – you know what? There's so many wrestlers from that part of the country that I shouldn't phrase it that way. It's probably the first name Wayne that I think, like, oh, he must have been a hockey player. And I just – you know, it's just I wasn't from there. But I think Wade mentioned on a hotline that the sledgehammer thing is a reference to his dad. But anyway – let's wait until Frankenstein's monster actually has a match before we speak that many more words about him at one time. I am at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I'll probably be embarrassed when I listen back to this show when it gets posted. I knew I was feeling under the weather, but I did not realize I had that much brain haze going on. So hopefully it was coherent to at least a passable extent. If you're listening to my excuses now, then maybe it was. Go VIP to listen to NXT 8 years back, where Bo Dallas was the champion. Sami Zayn was challenging him, and there were a lot of fun things going on, and some really maddening things that drive us crazy, like oh boy, I just remembered that this next episode coming up is Mojo Rawley's in-ring debut. Please help us.
Please help them, guys. Please help them. All right, and hopefully Kelly will be back next week to join us. All you've got to do is believe.